states. I mean, in Texas, if you get the per square foot price down low enough, companies may move in from Florida and Louisiana. That's not the same as our situation here. But you're talking about some heavy carrying costs. The other thing, and I've said this before, but I just would like to reiterate it, in my crystal ball, Class A is going to come around 1990 to 1992, and you're just talking about a period of hold. Class B, I think in commercial space, is in some instances probably not going to come back, and Class C has very little opportunities in the foreseeable future. So we have, whoever or whatever institution deals with the problem is going to have to treat these particular sectors differently, and I'm not sure how well we can, with a bridge bank or with any public or quasi-public entity, deal with those differentiations. I think Dave Rose and others have commented on the problems of artificially stimulating the market. I think your questions show you're aware of that. I would, on the other side of the equation, point out that, in my view, this is my personal view, we created probably one of the best socialistic systems known to mankind, and going cold turkey may be a difficult prospect on the other side of it. I mean, we've played around with the market for a fairly well, and I personally would hope that Alaskan entrepreneurs and Alaskan business people would have a future in the state, and that we wouldn't take a posture that let the market control, and it's not in our interest to worry about ownership, and if they're all people from California, so be it. I mean, I believe that we need to consciously manage our assets and conduct our affairs to get us over this period with as little problems as possible. Now, legislatively, I've commented on the need of a statute if we're going to do any kind of bridge banking or any kind, and that we're okay with the REIT. We need more flexibility in Alaska Housing Finance. We need more flexibility in ADIF. And those are areas, as I see it, of real appropriate legislative focus. I think that Alaska Housing Finance, for instance, needs more private sector people on the board. I'd like to see us have the ability to not specifically do trades for a period of time, but to react in manners that other financial institutions, because that's what Alaska Housing Finance is, for better or for worse, would. I think that we need, from my perspective as chairman of the board, we need to do something with the conflict problem. In a banking institution, if you have a conflict, you don't vote on that particular issue when it comes before the board. With Alaska Housing Finance, anybody who's a bank who works for a bank that's a servicer can't be on the board because he or she has a conflict. Anybody who works in the real estate industry and is a designated broker sells the houses can't be. So what we do is we create a nice situation where you can't get the talent on the board to deal with some of the problems. That, in my view, is an area for you to focus some of your attention on. I think that there's an area that is nobody has really focused on yet, and you might direct some attention to. It kind of is a natural outcropping or outgrowth of the Willow Park, Hollywood Vista situation, and that's condemnation and urban renewal. We have a supply and demand problem. We have a rail belt energy fund. The Heritage Land Bank in Anchorage, for instance. Most of the major problems with this type of real estate are in the rail belt. I think at some point in time you have to deal with how big a problem you think it is and whether you can have your cake and eat it too. And I think that perhaps the public sector could, through condemnation and improving the quality of neighborhoods, creation of parks and things of this nature, use the Heritage Land Bank and also your municipalities with loans from the Railroad Energy Fund grants. Well, I'd leave that to your thought process. But that would seem to me a very clean public response to the supply and demand problem, which would have a real impact on the other side. What I'd like to do now is be available, and if there are any questions, we are working very hard with the financial institutions through Willis Kirkpatrick and myself, and we are very focused on the problem and looking for initiatives and solutions. A lot of these are not conducive to the front pages of the newspaper, nor are they conducive necessary to legislative action. Thank you.
Mr. Smith, since you are in town, I'd like the members to defer their questions so we can get the out-of-town people a chance to testify, and I think we'll have to have you back for the questions. I'm Bob Gillum.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Gillum. I am chairman of the board of directors and chief executive of the Savings Bank in Anchorage, Alaska. I suspect I will be eternally grateful that Mr. Cuddy has left the room, inasmuch as we are a relatively small institution. I'm reluctant to speak as an expert, because an expert, as you know, is an individual with a great deal of opinion who is not responsible for same. As a result, I'll present my credentials and allow this committee to judge for yourself. My family has been in Alaska somewhere in the neighborhood of half a century. I myself, born in Fairbanks, Alaska. With all due apologies to Representative Boucher, unfortunately, I do have a degree in economics from the Wharton School. I also have a higher degree in finance from the UCLA's Graduate School of Business. For 15 years, I ran two investment banking firms in Alaska. In the last 4 years, I was a managing general partner of a major New York Stock Exchange member firm in Alaska, with responsibilities for corporate finance, municipal finance, and the management of pools of equity. I might also say parenthetically that my wife is an economist and was Scott Hawkins' predecessor for 6 years. She couldn't make this meeting, unfortunately. She had twins yesterday. I came to the banking industry 2.5 years ago in an effort to restructure and recapitalize the last remaining savings bank created by this legislature. It is our charge to be real estate lenders. And in fact, 60% of the loans made by our company must be in the area of real estate. I'm a free market advocate, and I have no experience whatsoever in the public policy issues. And I must confess that this is the first time I have ever testified before any legislature. I'm a big boy, and I understand the free market system. But I must tell you that even though we have doubled the capital of our small company from private sources in the last 18 months, that the economic collapse in Alaska is far, far beyond even our capabilities. Let me present the credentials of our company before I proceed. I'm here to discuss essentially three issues. The first issue is credit disenfranchisement of a large section of our borrowing populace. The second is in the area of housing and the most recent housing collapse. And lastly, the concentration of wealth and elimination of competition in our financial system. The credentials of our company are as follows. At the present moment, We make approximately one out of every four or one out of every five home loans that are made in South Central Alaska. We have two offices. We have but 2% of the bank assets in the state, and yet my understanding is that we are either the largest home lender or the second largest in the area. In 1987, contrary to the trend, our company dramatically increased our lending to the business sector. And in fact, we increased our portfolio for our own account by almost 45%. I'm here to talk about the economic catastrophe that has occurred because of the differences in the way in which banks cease to exist. I think that the financial and social costs are presently enormous, and it is this legislative body that has the charge of stopping the downward spiral. Much of what I will have to say will be microeconomic in sense, as opposed to macroeconomics. We deal with 37,000 depositors, customers, and borrowers. I must tell you that our lending increase in 1987, and indeed in the last 2 years we will have loaned $250 million into the Alaskan system. I must tell you that only one out of seven or eight or nine business borrowers meets our credit standards, and almost all of those new loans are coming from failed banks. Perhaps the greatest Democrat of all time, Franklin Roosevelt, knew that before the country could be reconstructed after the great collapse of the stock market, he knew that before that could happen, it was absolutely essential that the financial system be stabilized. It is true that in a period of 1 year, ended September 1987, that $500 million in loans were lost from the banking system. That's a large number, and when one multiplies it by the state multiplier, as Representative Rieger is aware, perhaps $2.5 billion less money exists in the financial system in Alaska today than but 1 year ago. The demise of the banks, which you are all aware of, Security National, Alaska National, First Interstate, Peninsula Savings, Frontier Savings, saw $700 million in depositors' dollars and $400 million in loans seek a new institution. The restructuring of Alaska Mutual and United Bank saw $1.2 billion in deposits and $800 million in loans restructured into what I now call the FDIC Bank. 40% of all of our deposit dollars and loans in this state will have been restructured in about 18 months. But the issue that I speak to is the differences in the way this restructuring has occurred. Not most recently, but in the past, institutions that have not done well, that is financial institutions, have been absorbed by generally larger and stronger institutions. Most recently, this is not the case in Alaska. And the consequences for our borrowers, especially our small businessmen, are disastrous. I must tell you that our average loan is perhaps less than $200,000. We do not loan to Atlantic Richfield. We do not loan to international corporations. We loan to basically small businessmen in Alaska and the purchasers of homes. But the restructuring of banks has had a disastrous effect upon the ability of small businesses to obtain loans. And understand the magnitude of the difference. Wherein a bank is absorbed by another, as in the case of the Alliance, a borrower still has a lender. He may not like the name on the door or the name of his officer, but in fact he still has a lender. I think the point was aptly made a few moments ago when it was asked, what about the extension of new credit? A new banker, whatever his name on the door, will discuss that with you. But I assure you that the FDIC will not. And that is the issue. $1 out of every $8 today that was but a year ago held in loans by Alaskan institutions is today held by an agency of the federal government whose sole purpose is to liquidate. You must understand that these people are not your neighbors. They're not here to extend new credit. They're not here to help you. They are here to maximize the cash return to the federal insurance fund. And then they will leave. So the customers, loan customers, of restructured institutions wherein the loans and the deposits go to a succeeding institution are far, far better off. And customers where deposits and loans are split apart. I fear that as much as one out of every three loan dollars in this state will ultimately be in the hands of the liquidators. Not one in eight. Presently, our banking system, as was testified by Commissioner Smith, hold $165 million of real estate. We have not heard about the dumping of those loans. We have not heard about the unmitigated collapse in prices as bankers throw properties out, because it is in the economic best interest of our Alaskan financial institutions not to dump those properties. It is not in the economic best interest of the FDIC to hold. So what has happened is almost an economic catastrophe insofar as our borrowers are concerned. Now, I'll give an example that occurred last Saturday before Representative Boucher's committee on small business. This gentleman and his wife had come to Alaska some 20 years ago and had started some daycare centers. And he had financed the daycare centers at First Interstate Bank, as would be the case when the construction loan was completed. There was no long-term loan 3 years ago. So First Interstate continued to roll the loan over every 12 months. But I will also tell you that in the last 24 months, we have seen a 21% and perhaps another 21% decline in real estate values in our community. So that property is no longer worth the loan balance. So when his loan was split apart from his deposits, this borrower received a letter from the FDIC requesting payment and suggesting that he go to another bank. I think Representative Boucher will confirm that he indicated that he had called the three major banks in our community and was told that they were not making real estate loans. This individual had 11 employees and a good solid business, and his payments were current. But because of the collapse of our credit system, this gentleman, like many, many others that we see every day, is now disenfranchised from the credit system. There is no hope for his business. There is no lender for him. None. I like to press on, but make the point that this legislature needs to prevent that kind of catastrophe. We must preserve the credit system which remains in our state. I started my testimony earlier by indicating that our company is a large housing lender and indicating that as a creation of the Alaska State Legislature, we are required to do that. In all, approximately $5 billion in wealth has evaporated in real estate values in South Central Alaska in the last 20 months, which is around $25,000 for every person in the community. We have done some homework in this area to determine how prices came down and who drove them down. We have discovered in running all the sales that 3 out of 4 sales, 75%, are driven by a governmental agency. I have some copies of an article which I have, I'll say, plagiarized from the Washington Post, which I sent to Representative Rieger, wherein this phenomena is noted in Texas and Oklahoma. One of the senior officers of the FDIC told me a year and a half ago, if you'd like to see what's going to happen in Alaska in a year, come to Oklahoma. So I did. And in that community, condominium prices have dropped as much as 95%. And the results, much like ours, occurred because of uncoordinated selling by governmental agencies. And if you think that I'm kidding, you need to look at the $100 down HUD homes for sale, full page in the Anchorage Press every week. So it is HUD that doesn't coordinate with Fannie Mae, which doesn't coordinate with Freddie Mac, which doesn't coordinate with Alaska Housing. But this phenomena of collapsing prices has a spiral effect that you must be aware of, which goes back to the credit system. And I'll quote the last paragraph of this as published in the Washington Post. Quote, as the number of homes for sales rises, the price of homes will fall. The farther prices fall, the more worthless loans backed by the homes become. As those loans lose value, so do the banks and other lenders holding them. The weaker the lenders become, the greater the likelihood that more real estate will fall to federal agencies. Unquote. We have a spiraling effect, and it must be for this legislature to stop the spiral. There are many in this room who believe in the good bank and the bad bank, I'm told. About 10 years ago, a man stood before the Congress when the prime rate was 20% and indicated that his company had 255,000 jobs. And would the Congress provide some loan guarantees to save the firm? After 3.5 days of public testimony before a joint House and Senate, the chairman of the board of the largest corporation in America stepped forward and said, do not provide that financial assistance. Fortunately, the Congress did, and today Chrysler Corporation is one of the best companies in our country, and Lee Iacocca himself is considered a hero of American industry. But I will tell you that there is some good news in the housing industry. Prices fall, but they also follow. And in fact, we will build a number of new houses in the Anchorage metropolitan market this year. And the reason for that is that the supply that seems to remain is at the lower end and the more dilapidated. The middle-income home is almost non-existent, especially the new home. So we will probably provide several tens of millions of dollars in new construction for a demand which is beginning to reappear. I'd like to talk lastly about the independent Alaskan banks. This is where I'm eternally grateful that Mr. Cuddy is not here.
He's there now.
My apologies in advance. The remaining small independent Alaskan banks, it was testified yesterday, lost approximately half of their capital in the last 12 months. The independent small banks in our part of the world have approximately two-thirds of $1 billion in assets and $420 million in loans. It is imperative, in my view, that those loans not fall to the hands of the liquidators for reasons that I have pointed out. 3 years ago, the three largest institutions in our state held approximately 44% of all the assets. At the call report date most recently, that number was two-thirds. And if one adds the assets of the new FDIC Alliance Bank, that number rises to 86%. That is to say, only four institutions now hold almost 90% of all the bank assets. In fact, in our own institution, we are an importer of capital. We do not own any municipal bonds. We do not own any treasury bills. In fact, for every dollar that we have in deposits from an Alaskan, We import 25 cents and lend it throughout the entire state. I know that there perhaps are other institutions, but I don't know the names of them. But we are long-term real estate lenders. We have recently closed major seven-figure loans in Kodiak, Juneau, Soldotna, Kenai, and Sitka. I don't know of any other lender that is doing that. The first time in 4 years, we were able to entice an outside lender into a major hotel refinancing just yesterday. All 230 members of the Federal Home Loan Bank System in the 12th District, which is the northwestern tier states, up until yesterday had refused to provide any long-term real estate financing in this state. I think it was Commissioner Smith, or perhaps Mr. Flint, that alluded to the redlining of Alaska. And from a practical standpoint, I can tell you that that is, in fact, true. So, we see an elimination of credit opportunities for thousands of Alaskans. We have seen a downward spiral of housing prices caused by government selling, and likely that will occur in the commercial real estate as well. We have seen a concentration of wealth in a small number of institutions, and we view that there is a potential of several hundred million dollars more of loans in the hands not of the bank liquidators, but the customer liquidators. Because when the bank goes away, the customers will pay the price, especially the borrowers. Their note will not be extended, and there will be no additional funds. Several solutions have been proposed before the legislature. Ours are rather broad-based, but first we suggest that it is not in the best interest of the state of Alaska for any more infractions in our credit system, and it is not in the best interest of our state to allow more failures in our financial institutions. More failures will mean more assets in the hands of the customer liquidators. If the legislature adopts a bridge bank or a bridge bank proposal, then allow the small banks or any bank to sell our foreclosed real estate at fair market values to that institution so that we can take those idle funds and reemploy them and lend them to businesses. We have several other proposals related to Alaska housing, which I have discussed in detail with Commissioner Smith, and I will not bore you with those. However, from the perspective of a small banker running uphill against a waterfall, these are difficult times indeed, and only this legislature can provide the leadership to stop this downward spiral. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we go to questions, I wanted to announce our Representative Run. There's a change of location if anyone is here for the another meeting.
Yeah, the Subcommittee on Fish and Game is being moved to the Judiciary Room so that we can continue our meeting in this room. So, to be shortly.
Also, before we go to questions, I want to announce that Pete McDowell has agreed, I believe, to meet next week. Is that correct? And so, if there are questions of the committee, Mr. Gillum will take them now, and then Representative Boucher had a question of Mr. Cuddy, which we've agreed to let him respond to after. Representative Springer.
Yeah, I heard you loud and clear. You said a couple times that you feel the legislature has an obligation to help and that the legislature must stop, say, the downward spiral. But then when you came to the solutions, I didn't really read anything what you envisioned the state or the legislature should do, other than we have to prevent further failures and that the small bank should be able to get into that if a bridge bank type solution is found to get into. I don't know exactly what you expect me to do, except get the greenbacks out.
I'm not sure I know exactly what to do. The question you ask has been addressed on the federal level recently. Bear in mind that there are essentially two banking systems in the country. Banks insured by FDIC and banks insured by FSLIC and administered through the Federal Home Loan Bank System. Our company is administered and regulated through the Federal Home Loan Bank. 1 week ago Thursday, or perhaps now it's 2 weeks ago Thursday in Washington, D.C., the Federal Home Loan Bank adopted what is called the Southwest Plan. The Southwest Plan is a bold initiative wherein the Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation will contribute equity capital on a subordinated debenture basis together with private capital, the purpose of which is to restructure 200 savings banks in the state of Texas. I assure you that not all banks in Texas are bad banks. I envision that kind of partnership in Alaska. The Alliance Bank and the people from the Hallwood Group contributed, I understand, about $6.5 million in private capital, and the federal government contributed about $340 million. At our company, we will have contributed $6.5 million of our own capital, and as of this date have received no state or no federal assistance of any kind whatsoever. And I will tell you that that circumstance cannot persist. It's imperative, in my view, that the portfolios of various institutions remain in the hands of people that can manage them. This committee has heard testimony today of a group that seeks to manage the properties after the doors of the institution were closed and after the businesses and customers and families were liquidated. I can tell you that if you were a customer of our company and you were having a difficult time, we will do all the necessary credit things that we can to preserve your credit, your family, and your business and your home. We'll lower the interest rate. We'll extend the terms. We'll lend you more money. We'll help you find a partner. We will do everything humanly possible to assist you through these difficult economic times. And I maintain that we are much, much better allowing our existing, or pardon, I should say, remaining institutions to work with our businesses than to propose some new super agency that will solve the problem after the doors are closed and after the customers have been liquidated.
Just to follow up, I believe you do that not because you're a nice guy, because you want to save whatever may go down the tubes anyway, but what about the state's role? I mean, the state initially wasn't a partner to the whole thing, and I have no problem what you say in principle. Where I have the problem is the matter of equity with other people, which for whatever reason did not get into problems. That's where I have the hang-up. I have not necessarily a hang-up with what you're saying, that the state should help because it's in the general public interest to help. But how about those people who are not in default, who for whatever reason did not borrow excessively or had the economic wisdom not to get themselves in the situation a lot of people got into? How is the government's role to those?
Well, you've asked me several questions, and I'll agree on the very first one, and that is that I'm not considered a nice guy. But insofar as the question of the good borrower versus the bad borrower, I think it was testified to earlier that very few people that I know of, economists included, could see this economic collapse coming. And that's also true of the Great Depression in this country. We went from what was probably a preventable and a not-to-be-sustained recession into a depression because we failed to take preventative action at the right time. We literally let our financial system collapse. And it was only the actions later of a later president, Franklin Roosevelt, that stopped that collapse.
Okay, so what do you envision then, that the state makes some kind of a loan program available the banks can draw from in order to bridge over and then either take part of the total loss or have a repayment scheme that may or may not materialize?
Capital for, and the word capital has almost been redefined since I was in business school, but capital can take several forms. Subordinated debentures is a primary method by which capital is presently being provided through the Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation to savings banks and banks in the states of Oklahoma and Texas. And what that really is a loan. But that loan acts as if it is capital. It must be paid in full with interest at maturity. To the extent that your lender can stay in business, he can work with you. To the extent that he cannot, you become in charge of the liquidators. So in my view, and again, and I want to make this very plain, I do not speak for all the independent banks in Alaska. I have, however, talked with them about this very issue. This is nothing more than a very difficult problem that must be bridged by our entire financial system. A very few dollars of subordinated debentures into our financial system will prevent hundreds of millions of dollars of customers falling into the hands of the liquidators.
Thank you.
Representative Boucher.
I guess that, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You talked about the Southwest plan, and I just read it briefly. You indicated that it had been applied to the state of Texas. What about the state of Oklahoma and states other than Texas? I mean, what relief was supplied to them?
Well, at the moment, the plan is, as I understand it, is being implemented on a federal level, and the first equity sharing arrangements are being implemented this week. The state of Texas, as I understand it, was and is the test case. And the Speaker of the House of Representatives, I will remind this body of the Congress, is from the state of Texas and has by far the largest problem in terms of gross dollars. However, all states that have oil-impacted economies will ultimately be eligible, in our view, for this kind of assistance. That would include Oklahoma, Louisiana, and other states, and that's why it is ultimately called the Southwest Plan. Unfortunately, we in Alaska, as you know, we have more oil than Texas. But we have such a small population base that we have not been included in that plan.
Might it not? That was something that I alluded to earlier, I think, one of our joint committee meetings. What help is available from the federal government, and are we seeking that?
Well, that's a good question. And I'll respond by saying, again, there are two banking systems, FDIC-insured institutions and FSLIC institutions. What is available on the FDIC side, I do not know. And most of the state chartered financial institutions are FDIC. Our bank, however, is FSLIC, and this Southwest plan, if made available, may perhaps assist savings banks in all parts of the country, including Alaska. There are only three FSLIC insured institutions in this state: ourselves, First Federal Bank, and here in Juneau, Alaska Federal Savings. So to answer your question in its entirety, I don't know of any assistance whatsoever, either proposed or on the boards for the FDIC institutions. But I will say that the parallel has been drawn between what was done with the Alliance Bank in Alaska and specifically the auspices of the plan of the Southwest. That is, it will be an equity-sharing arrangement of a governmental agency together with private capital, the purpose of which is, one, to preserve competent management of bank assets, two, to grow out of these economic times. The liquidation, it's been estimated, of the Texas institutions, which are, quote, insolvent, could cost the federal government $60 billion. This plan will cost the FSLIC $6 billion.
Madam.
Continue.
Distinguished co-chair, might it not just be a good idea that one of the things that this committee might do, and I'm just wondering if it would do any good, is to send a joint resolution from the House and the Senate asking if we can get in on Texas's action? We're sending out lots of resolutions on various things, and if there is an opportunity, if FSLIC?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, this is Max.
What it? Did you hear that, Max?
My question, if I may, is
this
the Texas Southwest plan, is that a federal law or a state law, Mr. Gillen?
This is it's a federal plan as proposed by the Federal Home Loan Bank. Actually not proposed, it has now been adopted. It has been adopted by the Federal Home Loan Bank of Washington, D.C. in conjunction with the FSLIC. I assure you that there are numerous state legislatures about our country this week that have asked that same question.
Well, let's move on it. I mean, we send all kinds of resolutions out. Are you, in effect, telling me that if we have a joint resolution from both houses allowing us to participate in what's called the Southwest Plan, that it could be of help to you?
I think it would be of help to the entire industry, not only in this state, but the entire Northwest. Yes, sir.
Have you been in touch with Senator Stevens or Senator Murkowski or other Washington delegation on this subject?
Yes, we have.
What's been their response?
We've worked with Senator Stevens' office, and we're assured that he has made every overture to the Federal Home Loan Bank in Washington on behalf of financial institutions in Alaska. We have yet to see a result of that, and I hope that the result will ultimately be positive.
You think that a resolution of both houses in that direction, I don't know what the wording would be of help?
I think it would be of an enormous significance that the legislature of this state recognize the gravity and the magnitude of the financial problem and recognize that there are federal agencies that have at least attacked some of the problem and are willing to provide aid and assistance.
Representative Bowser, I would suggest that we bring that up in our work session tomorrow on recommendations and be sure that it's put on the subject list. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any written material on this plan?
I have some here.
Yes, the plan is so new, and again, it was adopted just a week ago Thursday. We received from our Washington, D.C. Council what we call a fact sheet, which is a brief review of the policies adopted by the federal system. There are no specific rules as of this moment as to how they will be implemented, but I do understand that the first five cases are being implemented this week or perhaps early next. So what I have is, unfortunately at the moment, a broad overview of the plan, but I think it provides enough of the essence of the partnership between government and private enterprise to make its impact on this committee.
Madam Chair.
One last question. Go ahead, Representative.
I just want to know, would you be available to assist or other people that you're available to assist the body in putting the proper document together?
We, needless to say, have no priority that's of a higher magnitude. Yes.
The other questions of the committee? While I call Dave Cuddy to the stand.
I was just wondering what response you were getting to your investigations on behalf of Sea Alaska and whether there was a possibility that that proposal would materialize and how you view some of these other proposals that are before.
Is that possible to do in a short answer?
I'd be happy to.
Representative Gruenberg, that Pete McDowell was in the back of the room. His response was essentially that his answer would probably be more complex than that could be answered in a brief question. That he was happy to come back on Monday to give his testimony in more detail.
Well, the only point I would make is if our subcommittee, we are on a very tight timeline, and I feel that that's a piece of the picture that we should see before we, you know, try to make some statements. So I don't know how long people would like to stay here, but I would like to at least hear briefly from Mr. McDowell before we adjourn this afternoon.
Okay, I have no objection if the members don't. But I know Representative Bowser had one question of Mr. Cuddy, and I did say that we could let him answer that after Mr. Gill's testimony, and then why don't we call Pete McDowell up for as long as he has. I know you have a plane to catch at 4:30, so we'll get as much done as we can. Mr. Cuddy, would you like to answer that?
As I said before, I'm here on some other matters, and I'm not here to testify, but I got the impression there were some questions that someone might want to ask me, so I make myself available.
Representative Boucher.
You heard my question. Should we be involved in this?
As I see it, there are two questions before this body. One, should you spend $250,000 to get your feet wet and see if it's a good deal to do? And the second question, the bigger question, should government get involved in buying up these assets and managing them and holding them off the market for some period of time? I guess in answer to the first question, my position, I work for the First National Bank of Anchorage, and my position there is to evaluate the banks that have gone away, and that's my job to review those files and look at the assets and prepare bids, and so I'm kind of close to the question that you're discussing here. I guess for $250,000, that tells me a little bit of the difference between the private sector and the public sector. I would guess that NBA or ourselves would not spend a number in that ballpark to analyze whether it would be a viable purchase.
Could you give us a price?
Well, I would say that, let me give you an example of what we've done in
the
past.
This is what I want to find out. I want to find out if we need to bid this thing out, maybe. Maybe the private sector can do it better than Anchorage Economic Recovery. How much would you charge to do that?
Well, there's two steps that I would go through. The first step that we've gone through in the past, we, for example, Bank of the North, we had two other officers and myself, and we spent about 6 hours there. And we went through, I guess we picked one segment at random, say 60 or 100 loans or some number like that, and we spent 6 hours going through the files. So that's 18 hours of work. And we assigned a value that we felt those loans were worth. Fortunately, we were somewhat familiar with the names of some of the borrowers and the businesses, so we didn't we had a pretty good idea of what was there, and a lot of times we would also be familiar with the collateral that's behind those assets. In that case, our valuation of those assets was substantially less than what FDIC felt that they were worth, and so it was pretty clear it was not worth our time to spend more time going through that batch of loans. In the area that we were successful in buying some assets, recently another officer and I flew down to Seattle, and we spent a day going through the FSLIC's Peninsula Savings remnants, and we spent about 9 or 10 hours on a Monday, and we went through certain portions of the loans. We were also interested in buying other real estate owned, but they had certain that they couldn't go below certain numbers without going through lots of red tape and bureaucracy. It was clear that the value of that they would not sell them at the value that those assets had. So we were able to get rid of certain blocks and categories of assets that they wanted a lot more than what they were worth, but we were able to identify blocks of assets that we spent a lot of time on. We prepared a bid and were successful in that amount. So we went through, two of us in one day, probably 20 man hours. The $300 million that's left, there's certainly a lot more loans that are there, but I would say there's two steps. One, are you going to, I guess I see a bigger question.
Are you going to buy it?
Is FDIC going to sell this batch of loans at below market? Because I guess what I see is that it has to be below market in order for the bond to generate enough revenue at ultimate sale to pay back principal and interest. The market would pay, let's use some imaginary numbers. I don't know what the numbers are, but let's say there's $300 million in loans. Let's say that the market says that that batch of loans is worth $100 million. They say that in anticipation of selling and liquidating those assets over 18 months or 2 years or a fairly short period of time. If it's anticipated that the entity buying those loans is going to hold them and carry them for 5 or 10 years, then if you amortize in the carrying costs of the principal and interest, taxes, insurance, utilities, maintenance, vandalism, you're probably going to have to realize a much higher price at the end. If you take the house that was worth $100,000 4 years ago, and that's what's booked at FDIC, but it's worth $30,000 today, if your intention is to hold it off the market and not penetrate the market with that house, then what are your carrying costs for the first year? Well, you've got, say you've got a 10% cost of funds at $30,000, that's $300, and you have the cost of your taxes and your insurance, maintenance. Is the house in the valley? Well, if it's in a subdivision with no occupants, they tend to get vandalized. Sometimes people go in and just remove furnaces and windows, and so you have to calculate some of that cost when you're looking at carrying those items. And presumably you're not looking at leasing out all of those items, or you're still not really pulling them off the market. And so you, in my view, to be successful, the corporation would have to be able to buy this bunch of loans at below what the market says it's worth. And if the market says it's worth $100 million, then you might want to buy it at $80 million. And maybe FDIC would do that. Maybe they could be convinced that it's in the interest of the banks at large to protect them to have a governmental entity buy these assets and hold them off the market. And from our bank's standpoint, that'd sure be nice if somebody come in and buy these assets and hold them off the market. And so I guess I wear two hats. One as a banker, that's nice to pull them off the market. Another hat as an Alaskan, I'd like to see that we get a good bang for our buck. I think what you have to do, though, is make a policy decision. First, you have to find out, will the FDIC sell at below cost?
Mm-hmm.
Second, if they won't, then you need to make a policy decision. Are you willing to subsidize this project? Is it in the public interest to do that? And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's what you're here to do. But I just can't imagine that you could buy these assets and hold them off the market for an extended period of time and sell them and realize enough profit to pay back the accrued interest and all of your carrying costs. I think you'd have to buy them at below market or else build in an additional appropriation to subsidize it. Now then, I'm ready to try to answer part of your question. You're asking, what would it cost? I think those are a couple of the questions that you have to answer before you look at what does it cost to evaluate that portfolio. And I think you have a couple of steps. The first step is answering those questions, and then once you've answered them and decide you do want to go forward, then you still need to do the test batch. And So I'm not sure if that has taken place, but one of the easiest things to do would be to, if NBA has had these under their wing for a while, see if they'll open up and tell you what they're worth.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
And then find out what FDIC thinks they're worth. And I guess I've seen too often that once you get government as a buyer, and that's what this is, that government can be talked into paying too much, and I would hate to see this corporation bail out the FDIC by paying 40 cents on the dollar when really the market value is 30 cents on the dollar. And so I guess I see those as questions that would need to be asked first, and if you resolve them in your favor, then the question is, what does it cost to really evaluate it? And it's difficult to say, but I can't imagine that our bank would accrue more than a tenth of what that cost would be to be able to come up with a bid on it. I would think that a team of five people in a week or two would go through most of those files and send somebody out to snap photographs of the pieces of real estate that are there. And I would guess that with that kind of cost, we'd probably be able to, at least for our purposes, that's the way we've done it in the past, come up with a price that we would bid it in at.
Well, that is the purpose of my question. Might we not, instead of creating another government entity or putting money into another government entity, which was designed to do so to something totally different, might we not be better to come to you and say, hey, you picked those properties over. You and FIRST probably know more about those properties than the federal government does. And I understand, said earlier, you had a chance to not only take in some, look them all over, and then dump them back out there.
That was NBA.
Well, but they did have that opportunity.
They
was that
did,
correct?
And they certainly should be in a position, if they would volunteer the information, to probably give you at least answer the first part of the question of what does FDIC think they're worth and what does NBA think they're worth, and you'd get a ballpark figure.
Well, as I see it, now, bear in mind I'm not a banker, and things come to me slow, so I do ask a lot of questions, sometimes at the risk of them being stupid. Okay. The two top banks in the state, strongest for whatever reason, aren't interested in what's left out there on the table. Is that correct?
That's not correct.
Okay, all right.
NBA put in, I'm speaking for them, but I think I know where they come from. NBA put in their bid with a put-back feature where they could pick out the best loans, and then they were repaid at 100% on the dollar. So there was no reason for them to keep any loan that was not worth par or face. And unless they are just, it could be that they are so deluged with new, absorbing these other banks that they aren't interested. But if they are not overwhelmed by that, then I would guess they would be an interested party to come back and bid on the remainder. And at some price, I would guess they would be interested, just like we would be.
So you're still in the process of picking this up, and we might jump into this too soon. I mean, you're in the process of still evaluating some.
Well, but
of the
we would be not in a position to hold these off the market for 5 or 10 years, and I think that's what the theme of this is.
No, I'm not talking about that. I understand that. You're still in the process of evaluating some of these properties that are out there.
We have not been looking at them in the last couple of weeks. We've looked at them at the first pass, and the FDIC knows that we have an interest in it, and we keep in touch with them. I think that they're kind of looking and hoping that the state's going to get involved,
mm-hmm.
and my guess is that the hope is the state will pay more than the market would pay for them.
Okay, well, you just said everything I want to say. I mean, it is possible that we could get ourselves trapped into something that we might just be subsidizing it in the name of supposedly rescuing the economy. If we're going to subsidize it, then I think that this is what we ought to say, that indeed the economy needs subsidization, and that's the direction in which we do, as opposed to being the great protector, because there's a bunch of vultures flying around there that are going to move all of our wealth outside the state. Where are these vulture funds?
The vulture funds there have been a couple of them that have come by my office, and they are sitting there with lots of cash ready to buy, but they don't want to buy before the bottom is reached. And so the vulture funds, the representatives that I've talked with, are interested. They're looking things over. They're subscribing to newspapers. They're making trips into Anchorage from time to time.
Okay.
But there are a couple of indicators that they have to see take place before they're going to perceive that the bottom's been reached. And those features would include disposition of all those Alaska housing inventory loans, and ADA so far has been reluctant to put their properties on the market. The vulture funds don't want to come in and buy today and then have something cause Alaska Housing to change their policy and drop and dump their houses. And so with all that inventory hanging over the market, the vulture funds believe that that there's too much risk to buy, and there's too much risk that the bottom is yet to be reached.
Okay, I guess just one final question that's rather simple, and I go back to what I started out with. Is $250,000 a realistic figure to assess that? You've indicated to me that if the banks were doing it, that information would be available to the state if the state requests it is a lot less money.
No, I don't think I said that. Okay. I think I said that the banks would do it in-house for their own purposes at a substantially lower number.
Okay, right.
Now, if you could rephrase your question, maybe I could understand it better.
Okay. Would the bank do the, would the banks do this for the state?
I'm not in a position to answer that. It's not the question hasn't been asked of me, and I am not in a position here today to answer that question.
Okay. Would it be? Do you think that the state should request that information from you?
I guess if I were involved with this, I would certainly see if I could talk the banks into giving three of their people who would be knowledgeable in these areas to donate 3 or 4 days to go through these files and hire some $10 an hour people with cars and cameras to do the legwork and see if they could do it, particularly if those banks are having an ongoing... I'd certainly try to do it if the banks would do it. And if the right people at the right banks could be reached, you could rely on the information.
Then finally, you were a legislator, you're a state representative here. If you were sitting here, would you make the decision to put the money into taking those properties and putting them in a holding position?
I won't answer.
Would you?
I really won't answer.
Do you think it's good banking business? Do you think it's good practice for us to be doing that?
I really prefer not to answer.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. Mr. Kay, I was interested in exploring for just a moment the effect on the non-real estate portion of the FDIC portfolio, the small business loans or other types of loans, and with respect to who might buy those if the state, if the AEDC proposal or a Bridge Bank proposal or one of those ideas did not materialize and they were out there and disposed of by the liquidators. Is it likely, or do you have any feel at all for what type of entity might purchase those loans and how the management would be in the future? We heard testimony earlier that it's not necessarily going to be the case that one of these other entities being considered would be able to extend credit or operate, you know, presumably would not be able to operate like a normal bank. I'm just struggling with trying to figure out how that small business is necessarily better off in one of these holding situations than they would be if they were bought by another concern outside who might wish to see it go as a business. Do you have any comments on that?
I guess it's all public information now that the banks have closed, but speaking generally, the loans that are there are not very good loans. You can imagine that if they were good, viable businesses with good net worths and had the viability, that they could find other banks to borrow money. There was one comment made earlier that the three larger banks were contacted and stated they weren't making real estate loans. That isn't true. I know our bank has way too much in short-term. We've got a lot of cash, and we're looking for a home for it. We've got it in the treasuries and the municipal bonds, and we'd love to get it in higher rate loans, but it's difficult to find the loans that are to viable businesses. Real estate. One of the reasons that we're not able to make very many real estate loans, we haven't changed our criteria at all. But the problem is that a lot of the real estate out there, there's more owed on it than what it's worth. And people come in to borrow money, and they're ahead just to try to assume the existing financing and keep the payments in place. But our bank, at least, is aggressively looking for more loans, particularly real estate loans, and we just, using the same criteria that we had 5 years ago. But one of the problems is the values drop. There are less pieces of property out there that don't have, that aren't already heavily mortgaged and that need more financing. So the question is, what would happen to, I'm sorry, the question is, who would be a potential other buyer of these loans and how would they handle the liquidation of the business type loans? Is that the question?
Yeah, if another buyer picks up a small business loan. We heard testimony earlier that part of the concern is that this is not only real estate, these are business loans, and if these businesses can't keep operating and can't continue to get capital, working capital, that they'll go out of business and jobs will be lost and, you know, the negative situation will be compounded. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, how that, just think that through. Is that, will they necessarily be worse off if they are sold to another entity, and trying to get some feel for what other kinds of entities would purchase that type of loan? And if we don't have working capital in the bridge bank concept, or that is that, that entity is not able to act as a bank and advance money, why are they better off here than they would be being purchased by another entity outside?
I guess then you get to a question of, are those businesses that remain viable? And different people would have different opinions on that. If you use the guideline that there ought to be a minimum of 25% net worth to equity ratio, a lot of those businesses aren't viable. Or if you look at what their profit or loss structure picture was for year ending December 87, are they making money? Can they service debt? I guess I'll try not to make a judgment, but I would say that without making a sweeping statement, at least there are quite a few of the loans that are held by those other banks that just are simply non-performing and that just aren't viable. And what does the next bank or entity that takes those loans over, how do they handle those? What do they do with them? If it's private sector, they'd have an awful tough time lending them more money or trying to prop them up and keeping them in business, because the risk-reward ratio wouldn't be proper. If government does it, government may not look quite so closely at the risk-reward ratio and might make a policy or philosophy statement that they'll stick money into these businesses or extend them for a couple of years and not worry about whether there's a return. And again, that's a policy statement for government to make.
Thank you.
Representative Springer.
I just had a short follow-up question on Representative Boucher.
Yes, I answered my question.
If I understood you right, you figured that we might get a fair assessment of the FDIC portfolio, 5 people, 10 days, so $50,000 with overhead could be a realistic figure.
Again, I just walked in the door 2 hours ago. I wasn't prepared to get into this subject, and you've got two other experts who've given you another number, and it's—they could know something different than what I know. And the standard of dealing with governmental bodies is different than with private sector. I've said that a private company could do it a lot cheaper because it's in-house. You trust people. You have employees that have been with you for 15 years. You don't need some of the duplications that may be necessary in a public corporation. So I would prefer not to answer that question either.
But let's rephrase it and leave the government away. For yourself as a businessman, you would think with that type of investment you could get an answer for you to make a prudent assessment of the portfolio.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for agreeing to answer some questions. This time I'd like to call in Pete McDowell.
I'll teach you to walk in the door.
I know you have to leave to catch a plane, but as much time as you have, I know it might be only 5 or 10 minutes, but please give us a summary of where you are.
Sir, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and if I may just suggest I'm traveling to Whitehorse with Representative Porchot, and I was just speaking with a member of your staff, and if it would be appropriate, I could join him tomorrow during your work session from Whitehorse. But I'll be glad to at least try to answer your first question.
The work session is going to be teleconference to Whitehorse or conference phone? Or
no. That was what one of your staff just said to me.
Well,
before you leave, let's try to get an answer to that. Should be possible with a speakerphone.
I was just going to say, can you briefly tell us the status of the investigation you've done for Sea Alaska that we've read about in the newspapers?
Sure, and I might just give you a brief introduction. The proposed investment opportunity existed, or actually began, about 10 months ago. And there were discussions during a project I was working on for Sea Alaska Corporation last spring that evolved into a proposal to establish an Alaska-owned and managed real estate investment trust funded by private interests. This was discussed with Commissioner Smith and other people at the Department of Commerce and Economic Development at the time. And I believe what's occurred about a month ago is that that idea has moved a little bit closer toward fruition. The response of Sea Alaska Corporation to dialogue with Commissioner Smith last month was to say, yes, the corporation is interested in pursuing further an examination of the feasibility of such an investment entity and would take the lead in doing so. They then engaged me to serve as their consultant and effectively as project director for the next few months to examine further the possibilities that we identified last spring. Discussions to date with other potential private sector institutions that have indicated possible interest in investing with Sea Alaska Corporation have been positive but very preliminary. At the moment, discussions are only being held with Alaskan private sector interests that have the wherewithal to make a high-risk but sophisticated investment decision in probably in the neighborhood of several million dollars each. And those people, the half dozen or so that I've institutions whose representative I've talked to on behalf of Sea Alaska have been positive and want to go further in the process of analyzing this as an investment opportunity.
Does the action taken by the state, I guess, would you consider it a preempt in some sense if the state were to move and buy the whole portfolio, or do you look at it as a complementary effort, or how is the are these other proposals or plans going to affect your clients?
Well, I think in general, all of the proposals we look upon as having a positive impact. Generally, the problem is larger than any one particular entity that's been identified so far. And there are, as I understand it, literally four proposals in the works: the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, the Sea Alaska Initiative, the Bridge Bank proposal, which I understand has resulted in some Senate legislation, and which may be the same thing, a proposal to establish a trust of sorts that has been described by the Hallwood Corporation. I agree with Commissioner Smith on the magnitude of the concerns that there is around $1 billion worth of property out there that's not in the hands of state government agencies. I would also postulate that there's probably another $1 billion worth of foreclosed real estate and real estate assets that are at least partially non-performing in the hands of state agencies, primarily AHFC. As of December 31, 1986, the last time I reviewed the situation, there were $850 million of such assets in the hands of state agencies, and I can't perceive that that number would have declined in the last 12 months. So there essentially are $2 billion worth of foreclosed real estate and real estate secured lending paper of one kind or another in the makeup of urban Alaskan real estate. That is so much that I don't perceive, and I don't believe my client perceives, that any one effort is going to be satisfactory. That, in fact, it will probably be appropriate for all of the major holders of this kind of property to have a dialogue about some form of compact, and that there be at least an understanding among all the holders, whether they're federal, state, private, or otherwise, that the market for $2 billion worth of distressed Alaskan real estate assets is of all concern to all of them, and that the behavior of one could have a very dramatic impact on the other, particularly if each holds at least 10% of the total. And that's other than the last $500 million, which is held by a number of institutions, there are only really four large holders at this time: AHFC, ADA, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and Alliance Bank. So the short answer is yes, we perceive that the several initiatives are far more beneficial than having just one on the table because of the size of the problem is larger than any one of the initiatives can probably be financed to deal with it.
Are you persuaded that government action is needed and would be effective?
Well, in general, I know, can't really address the nature of government action. I think the point that's more appropriate is that government involvement is already very, very significant, and therefore anything that the government agencies already involved do will constitute important influences on the market. There, it's not a question of government getting involved. Government is involved.
Let me rephrase that. Are you persuaded that it would be in the overall public interest for the legislature to proceed with one of the specific proposals on the table in an attempt to stabilize the market, to proactively become more involved than we are at this time?
Again, I'm not trying to duck the question, but it's, I think the basic answer is that there are potentially investment opportunities through private sector participation in the stabilization, very high-risk opportunities, and I don't perceive that there is probably enough private capital that's interested in this kind of investment available to deal with all of the assets. But beyond government intervention through the existing agencies that are already involved, I don't have any specific proposals for further intervention beyond that which is already in existence.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee? I've been informed that it will be possible for you to participate by teleconference tomorrow, and maybe you can give a more detailed presentation of probably what you plan to present today. So we'll look forward to hearing from you tomorrow.
Thanks. I'll look forward to the opportunity.
Mr. Chairman, this is Max Gordon. I wonder if I could make one request.
Proceed.
Commissioner Smith made a number of suggestions, and they were very great. They sounded to me like they had that they were important. And I'm wondering if he would mind submitting them in writing in a very brief outline, form 1, 2, 3, 4, so that the subcommittee and the committee can consider them. But I would just like him to put them down very brief, no more than a sentence or two on each, so that we have them and can review them at length.
The commissioner is nodding his head yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDowell. And if there's no other business, just want to remind members of the 11 o'clock a.m. meeting in this room tomorrow, and we're adjourned.
Out of the room when the Southwest plan was brought up. So,
someone wants to leave our binders so that if you want to leave them here.
He wanted it distributed.
We're just going to
let him bring it up. Once he brought it up, we'll get it out to the members.
Yeah. Well,
he wants the rest of it.
You understand? See, I don't really grasp yet quite what it is.
Well, I read
or what
that.
The whole thing is. And,
well, the idea of open bank is like what the private capital comes in, Fed matches it, generally more than a 1-to-1. However, there's a twist. Get everything. They are talking about I think that if we can get federal money,
yeah.
I don't think that they're going to really dump it there.
Very very consolidated
we're
already.
Stand it along the lines of what you do with that kind of thing.
Right.
And this will.
Okay, I'll try to read that before tomorrow. And also this Hollywood thing, which I just got.
Oh, I haven't even read
that. What I think we ought to do, maybe, and you know, we may
Thanks.
Not be ready to if we think about it. As far as you know, trying to synthesize, I think it will be helpful to have a discussion of what we've heard and kind of try to wrestle around with the major policy issues. And there may be that